Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me?
Welcome and good morning. I'm Harry Miller.
And I'm Debbie Verney.
And Debbie and I are two of the attorneys. We're with the Herzog Law Firm. We have four conveniently located offices in Saratoga Springs, Clifton Park, Albany, and Kingston, New York. And we are here each Saturday morning, as we have been for many, many years, to talk to you about estate planning, elder law, asset protection planning, Medicaid eligibility for qualifying for nursing home care and personal care services at home, wills, trusts, powers of attorney, estate administration, all those good things that all of you think about, know about, worry about, and have questions about. And Debbie and I would love to talk to you this morning here at Magic 590. So pick up the phone, pour yourself another cup of coffee, sit back, we'll be here for the next hour, and call us here at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. If you're outside the local calling area, you can reach Debbie and I toll free at 1-800-WROW-590. So, hey, good morning, Debbie. What's going on in your world?
Not much. I was heading over from the house, and I was running a little bit late, and I thought, do I risk driving by the track, or do I cut back the other way? Because even though there's no fans at the track, in the morning they're still exercising the horses, and they're absolutely beautiful, but it's like You don't want to get stuck in that traffic where they're walking across the street because you don't know how long you're going to be stuck there.
Oh, that's right. They walk them over, across Union Avenue, you mean, there? And okay. I never even thought of that. I thought, like, it's probably a ghost town up there in Saratoga. I mean, compared to what it usually is, it's not so crowded there. But, you know, early mornings, that's when they do all the, walking and the riding and all that other stuff, huh? Well.
Yeah, no, it's in, but they've got, like, a screen, a black fabric inside all of the fences, so you can't stand there and watch them.
Oh, okay.
You can see them walk across the street.
Wow. That sounds exciting. They are pretty, though. I mean, the horses are just magnificent. The thoroughbreds are just really magnificently beautiful animals. They really are. Amazing. Well, hey, we have a couple of anniversaries here today. I just, you know, it's August 15th. It's the Ides of August. And let's see. I bet Ben probably knows this. August 15th, today is the 51st anniversary of a very important event in the music world. Know what it is, Ben?
I do not.
Debbie?
Nope.
It's the 51st anniversary of the Woodstock Festival.
Ah.
Ooh.
All right. Which Harry was a part of.
Max wasn't there. I was in college at the time. I actually was a junior in college in 1969 and entering my senior year. I did not go to the Woodstock Festival.
I could see Harry rolling out of a VW bus with wired rim glasses and tie dye all over him, saying, "Hey, when is Jimi Hendrix coming on?"
Exactly.
Well, listen, at the time, I was dating a girl who actually had a VW bus.
That does not surprise me.
Not my wife. So, okay, she knows about it. It's also, tomorrow is also a very important anniversary in the music world as well, August 16th. Tomorrow is the anniversary of a very famous singer's death. Actually his birth. Yeah, no, his death, yeah. Which one is it, Ben?
Jim Morrison? Jim Morrison?
Oh, for heaven's sakes. No.
Well, he would be famous. Part of the 27 Club.
Try Elvis.
Oh, yeah.
Try Elvis.
Yeah, he's kind of famous.
He died on August 16th, 1977, 43 years ago. Amazing. Do you know that if Elvis were alive today, he'd be 85 years old. It would be his 85th birthday.
And he would have had both hips replaced.
He was born in January, yeah. I know. Well, there was the young Elvis, and then there was the ballooned Elvis. You know, it was
right.
Amazing. Okay, so just a little bit of trivia. Hey, we have been doing webinars like all month, and we had a webinar week, and don't we have this? We got two more webinars in August left, don't we, Debbie?
We do. We've got one on, well, we've got two on Wednesday. So we always have webinars on Wednesday. It's Webinar Wednesday. On Wednesday, August.
Webinar Wednesday.
Exactly.
That, you know, we did that purposely, so, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
Sorry.
Anyway, so Wednesday, August 19th at 10 a.m. is How to Plan Your Estate. And at 2 p.m. is planning for when a loved one has special needs. The one for special needs is really interesting because a lot of people don't think about it whenever they're doing their planning, whether their children or their grandchildren are on disability or they have other issues. In the past, a lot of people would just say, oh, I'll leave everything to my daughter, Sally, and then Sally will take care of her brother, Chuck, because, you know, I don't want him to lose his benefits. But now there's options to where you could set up a special needs trust for their share to go into so that you don't have to worry about your children fighting over money. And then Wednesday, August 26th is 10 a.m., your coronavirus checklist. Do I have everything I need in the event of a health crisis? And 2 p.m. is Medicaid and estate planning myths, which is always fun because I always call that water cooler talk. When people call you up and say, well, my neighbor told me this, you know, so that one's kind of a fun one because we kind of dispel the myths about estate planning and Medicaid planning. So you can go to our website at www.herzoglaw.com. Again, that's www.herzoglaw.com. You can click to register, and we're also, you know, going into September, we're going to have webinars every Wednesday, and we will have a week of webinars, webinar week. Hey, look, isn't that cool? We'll have a webinar week in September, too.
September.
And you can go on our website. That'll be posted this week sometime as to the webinars. We'd love for you guys to join us. They usually last about an hour. You have to bring your own popcorn and cookies. Unfortunately, we can't furnish those, but it's a great opportunity to get some information, and then we generally send out the slides after the webinar so that you have them in the comfort of your home. You can print them if you want to and review everything.
Yeah, and Debbie will have a plate of brownies sitting in front of her at the camera and a cup of coffee. So if you don't have your own cookies, you can imagine eating one of Debbie's brownies. Very good. You know, it's really, you talk about Medicaid planning myths and estate planning myths. It really, I mean, it's there's so much. Just give an example. I had a meeting with some clients yesterday. In the office, and then one of the children, you know, the thing about these meetings with kids, we can tie your children, you know, your child in Massachusetts or New York City or California, we can tie them in on a conference call. So they can all be in the room with us, even though they're, you know, thousands of miles away. And this guy, I mean, we had done estate planning for him like maybe 15, 20 years ago, and now his wife is in a nursing home. So they come to me. Well, he came to me like a month ago to redo some papers. And I said, look, you have all this. He's privately paying the nursing home for like a year and a half. So I had his virtual conversation. His daughter was with him. His son was on the phone. It turns out, he says, well, a year ago, we went to somebody, and they told us that all we could do was spend all the money down until there was only $15,000 left. We're talking about maybe more than $300,000 of outside assets that aren't in a trust. I said, well, I don't know who that was, but they gave you really bad and incorrect information. So we're now in the process of doing, you know, we can still save close to half of the money that's unexpended at this point. The sad thing is they've already spent like maybe $150,000 in the last 12 months that they didn't have to spend all of. So these are the kinds of myths and things and the people either get from their neighbors, or worse yet, these people actually went to a lawyer, okay, who may have been a fine lawyer to prepare a will or a power of attorney, but didn't know squat about Medicaid planning. So it's really important to dispel these myths and really, facts matter. I know this is a tough time right now in terms of what to believe and what not to believe, but facts are really important, especially in the estate planning and Medicaid planning process.
Yeah, and the changes that are coming down the pike for community Medicaid, too. We've kind of been harping on that ever since they came out with a new budget and trying to get people to understand that before October 1st, you can transfer assets and there's no look-back period for community Medicaid. But as of October 1st, they're going to start phasing in a look-back period. So if you've got planning that you need to do, you really should think about it now. Or if you have someone that's kind of borderline, I was talking about this on my webinar yesterday. I said, you know, if you've got somebody that's borderline that you do need some care, you know, get community Medicaid, get some care in. It's like they reassess. Similar to your mother-in-law, how many hours did she originally have when you first started?
When she started in the program about 3 or 4 years ago, she initially was only approved for like 15 hours a week, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So at that time, my wife found a woman who would come 3 days. She'd come on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for 5 hours. That was 15 hours. You know, 5 times 3 is 15. And she would clean the apartment, do the wash, change. You know, my mother-in-law couldn't. She couldn't change her sheets anymore. Somebody who's on a walker can't change their bed. And they might be able to put some wash in the washer, but they can't actually make the bed. They can't run a vacuum cleaner if you're on a walker. It's hard to get out. She couldn't drive anymore. She needed somebody to go to the grocery store, pick up her medicine. You know, those are personal care services, all right? And but then, over the last period of time, by the time she was, you know, at the worst part, she had been approved for, now we had 70 hours a week. So that's like 5 times the initial amount almost. So by the time the last 5 months that she was alive, we were able through the Medicaid program to have someone in the house 7 days a week for 10 hours a day. That's 70 hours a week. And that was all paid for by the Medicaid program, which was a tremendous financial blessing to her and also to us because, you know, so once you're in the system, here's the deal. Once you're in the system and you're approved for the 15 hours, when you need more hours, you don't have to reapply, all right? You're already eligible. All you have to do is talk to your managed long-term care company who manages the system for the state social services department, and you and that person, they come out and evaluate. They come out and spend an hour or two with my mom and say, yeah, she needs more than 15 hours a week. She needs 30 hours a week now, and then she needs 45 hours a week. So you can work these systems in. And as Debbie was saying, we're telling people, remember, it's only 6 weeks till October 1st. So you don't even not be thinking about doing it. You actually have to be doing it. It takes time to transfer these assets. Bank accounts you can transfer quickly. But if you're transferring stocks or mutual funds, it might take a couple of weeks to get them actually transferred somewhere. So don't dawdle. And I've been telling people, look, if your mother doesn't need care now in 2020, but you think in a year she's going to need care, well, let's get the assets transferred at least, because then when you apply a year from now, you won't be penalized for having transferred those assets. After October 1st, you will be.
Right, so it would be smart to come in and probably set up a trust or figure out exactly what assets you'd be over, because if it's a single person and they're looking for community Medicaid, they're only going to be able to keep, what, $15,750, right?
That's it, yeah. I mean, that'll go up in January, but it won't go up much. It'll go up a couple $100, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so that's it. For a single person or a widow, a married couple can keep more because in addition to the $15,000 for the person who's applying for Medicaid, the spouse can keep almost $75,000. So, you know, but even so, yeah, right now, what you ought to do is get the trust set up, put the assets in the trust, and then you can wait down the road to actually file the application. You can't apply if you don't need the care. That's the problem. In order to apply for personal care services, you actually have to need the care. Otherwise, you can't pre-apply for these programs, but you can get your ducks in order by putting your assets in a trust now so that a year or two from now, you're not going to be subject to this, what will by then be a 2.5-year look-back penalty.
Yeah, that makes sense. I got a call one of my clients this week, and he said that he had read an article in the New York Times that talked about how to protect your assets. So he called me up, and we did a revocable trust. Wow, probably 10 years ago. And the reason we did a revocable trust is because at that time he had long-term care insurance, and he was like, oh, I'm not worried about it. Well, now his long-term care insurance, he basically has kept his costs down by not having the inflation rider. So right now he's looking at, yeah, exactly. So right now his coverage is only about $150 a day. And I told him, well, you're going to be about $300 a day short times 30 days. You're going to be about $9,000 short a month. He goes, a year. I'm like, a month. You're going to be about $9,000 short a month. And he's like, so what do we need to do to convert my revocable trust to an irrevocable trust? And I said, that's easy, right? We've already got all the assets into the revocable trust. All we have to do is now make it an irrevocable trust, and the 5 years starts to run. So for those people that have revocable trusts, it's a fairly easy process to change your revocable trust to an irrevocable trust and get that time period running, and or to get the time period running for community Medicaid, too.
Harry and Debbie?
Sure.
Didn't mean to jump in on you, Harry. We do have a caller. We have Patrick in Troy.
Great. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning. Thank you, folks, for taking my call. First question, the stimulus money that was given to people earlier in the year, my wife and I both qualified for $1,200, and we have one child under 18, so we ended up getting $2,900. Yeah. Will that be a taxable event that we have to declare as income at the end of the year?
Wow, I'm not absolutely certain. Do you know, Deb?
I'm pretty sure it's not taxable, but I will definitely check that out. But the I'm pretty sure the stimulus checks are not taxable. I know that there was a lot of talk that people weren't prepared to pay taxes on unemployment, but...
Right, I only say that because I heard today... I didn't get any unemployment, but unemployment is a taxable event. People are going to be surprised come the end of the year with all their that they're going to have to pay taxes on that income.
Right. Yeah, that's correct. I do know that the stimulus money is not considered income if you're on Medicaid. Okay, I think it's exempt, like certain kinds of reparations payments and things like that.
I don't qualify under Medicaid.
Well, no, you wouldn't, but you know what happened in a lot of cases. What happened with a lot of people in nursing homes is some of the nursing homes were taking the $1,200 stimulus check and applying it toward the nursing home bill. And they are not allowed to do that. So I know I caught up a month or two ago. I was telling people if you got a relative in a nursing home, just check it out because the nursing home is not allowed to take that $1,200 from your mother or your father.
So the answer is no. The stimulus is not taxable.
Not taxable. Well, good. That's good news.
Okay.
I just looked it up.
And a second question: If a non-family member bequeaths some money. Hypothetical, to a third party, such as myself, several thousand dollars. Is that a taxable, reportable income?
In New York, it's not. No, there's no inheritance tax in New York. It depends, though. It's not retirement assets or an annuity or anything. It's just cash or stock.
I believe so, yes. Yes.
So if you're getting something that's not tax-deferred, then there's not going to be any tax on it because there's no inheritance tax in New York. If there was a different state, like Pennsylvania, then there would be inheritance tax, but not in New York, no.
All right, what about federally, though?
No, on federal, it's not tax. If your aunt leaves you a $100,000 bequest in her will, there is no income tax on that, no. You don't pay income tax on an inheritance unless, as Debbie said, if your aunt left you a $100,000 IRA, then you'd have to, as you take the money out of the IRA, you have to pay income tax as you take it out, just as your aunt did.
Right.
But as a general rule, money that you receive by way of gift and inheritance is not taxable income to you.
Okay.
All right. Well, if the estate, sure. Thanks for listening. Keep listening. We appreciate it.
Ma'am, you said you're going to double check on that the stimulus money.
I just checked. No, I just checked. It says it's not.
Awesome. Thank you, folks.
Okay.
I appreciate
that's
it very much.
That's free money. Yeah, that's better than winning lottery. You got to pay income tax on the lottery winnings. Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Have a great weekend.
Okay. Okay. By the way, speaking of IRAs, I just wanted to remind everybody, and Debbie, you talked about this a great deal in when we did our client appreciation webinar in July. Mm-hmm. August 31st is fast approaching, like in 2 weeks. So those of you out there, if you have taken a distribution from your IRA or your 401k plan or your New York State deferred comp account since January 1st, you only haven't, if you didn't need the money, but you took it out anyway, you have until August 31st to return it to the IRA you took it from, and then you don't have to pay income tax on the money. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So, a lot of people did that, or some people have their accounts set up so that their financial, you know, like their investment people just automatically withdraw it and put it in their checking account or whatever, or send them a check. So if you got that money and for some reason you don't need it or you haven't spent it and you can put it back, you can avoid paying income tax on it this year. All right, so because that ability to do that ends on August 31st.
It does. That's quickly approaching. But if you want to be our next caller, we at least had one, which is awesome. The phone number here is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. You could be our last caller for this half hour, or you could be our first caller for the second half hour. Now, Harry, you told me you had a story about the dog ate my will.
Yeah, you know, this is actually, I mean, this is actually going to happen. So, you know, all your kids, you've heard this story about the dog ate my homework. You know, the kid goes to school, he says, where's your homework? The dog ate my homework. Well, so you might get an F, but suppose Rover isn't interested in your homework, but he ate your will. That could result not in an F, but in an L, a lawsuit, which is just what happened in Texas, okay? So this woman named Billy Ray Hood, what a Texas name that is, Billy Ray Hood. She died a couple of years ago, survived by her husband, Jack. He survived her, but he died five days later, all right? Now, Billy Ray left behind two wills, one from 2003 and one from 2009. 2003 will left everything to her husband, who is not the father of her three children. Billy Ray wrote another will in 2009 that left her assets, all of them to her children and nothing to her husband. Then she died. And then her husband died. So she left the will with her attorney in Texas. Okay? So, and for some reason, this lawyer, who probably should be... just left the will in his den. He didn't have a vault. Like, we have a huge vault where all of our wills are locked up. But her attorney had it in the den. And guess what? The lawyer's dog got the will, chewed up the will, dragged it into the backyard. And after he was done, apparently all that was left of the will was about half of the first page and a couple of fragments of pages 2 and 3. I mean, this is not funny, folks. All right, so guess what? Jack's daughter, the husband's daughter, Geraldine, said, hey, wait a minute. That ain't a will. It was destroyed. Daddy's will, the last will, that leaves everything, you know, she ate the will that left everything to her kids. So the old will that leaves it to my daddy, and ergo to me, is the real will. So what happened? What do you suppose happened? You know, guess what? It's still in litigation. All right? Now, I can tell you what I think is going to happen.
Oh, please do.
I think what's going to happen is that even though the dog ate the will, it will be admitted to probate. You know, it is possible to probate a photocopy of a will if you have satisfactory explanation of why the will was destroyed and that it was not intentionally revoked by the person who made the will, that is Billy Ray. Okay, so here the will was in the possession of the lawyer, okay, and she didn't call up the lawyer and say, hey, lawyer, I want to destroy my will, but I'd rather have your dog chew it to pieces. She didn't do that. No. The dog took the will. In fact, this happened once. I once in my career probated a will, a photocopy of a will. And what had happened was the lawyer who prepared the will wasn't in our office, inadvertently sent the file to the shredder. He didn't put the will in a vault. The original will was in the file. The file went to the shredder. All was left was a photocopy of the will. We were able to probate the photocopy of the will based on affidavits from the lawyer that this had happened, that the person who made the will did not, in fact, revoke it. And the court, I think it was in Albany County, the court allowed the photocopy to be probated. I suspect that's what will happen here. But it's in Texas, so who knows? They have a photocopy of it. They have a photocopy of the signed will. So I think Jack's daughter's going to lose, but I'll keep you posted. So the moral of the story here is make sure your will is safely stored. Make sure your lawyer has adequate precautions to make sure that your will is locked up in a safe, locked, fireproof vault. And and for heaven's sakes, don't keep it at home in a drawer. All right? Please.
And don't write on it.
No, don't write up. People call me up. You know what they do? They say, I just want to make these couple of changes because, you know, please. I said, don't. No, please don't. Because if you mark anything on your will, it is evidence that you intended to revoke it, all right,
right,
by changing it. And then you may not be able to probate it. And guess what happens if you can't probate that will?
Then you don't have one.
Then you don't have a will, okay? Then the state of New York has written a will for everybody who doesn't have a will. And most times, those people's money are going someplace where they don't want to go. All right?
True.
Or worse yet, if you have an old will, we go back to the old will, which also probably doesn't leave your money where you want it to go, because if it did, you wouldn't have had to make a new will, right?
True.
So, we need to be careful with these things. So, wills are one thing that we have not done yet, at least in New York, is gone to virtual wills. Some states like Florida actually allow you to sign and witness a will on the internet. I think it's a terrible idea, just because it is so susceptible of being hacked that it troubles me that anyone would do that. In other words, in Florida, I could be sitting here at home signing a will. Debbie, my lawyer, could be in her office in Saratoga Springs or in Albany. She could watch me sign the will and supervise the execution, and I could have two other witnesses in some other place, and I can even sign it remotely. I don't even have to sign my name to it. So here in New York, right now during the pandemic, we can remotely witness wills, but you actually got to sign the piece of paper.
You have to have a wet signature. That's
yes,
what they call
you,
it.
You can't one of these electronic. You know, we don't use electronic signatures in New York, I hope we never do. But interesting.
All right.
Anyway,
we are at the bottom of the hour. I would have jumped in earlier, but the dog ate my email, so I don't have that. So we will be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour coming up right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for,
options available for Medicaid planning, and more.
With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany,
West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs,
Executive Woods in Clifton Park,
and Flatbush Road in Kingston,
our attorneys are here to help you.
If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David,
Jane Marie Harry, or Debbie,
please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581.
Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131.
Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010.
And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405.
Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome back to the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour. I'm Harry Miller.
And I'm Debbie Verney.
And Debbie and I are two attorneys. We are with the Herzog Law Firm. Our main office is located here in Albany in Corporate Woods. We have three other offices, though, in Saratoga Springs, Clifton Park, and Kingston, New York. And we're here to chat with you, get you some, hopefully some interesting information and tidbits about estate planning, elder law, Medicaid planning, estate administration. And we would love to talk to you this morning here at the radio station. You can reach Debbie and I for the next half hour at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900 outside the local calling area. You can reach Debbie and I toll-free at 1-800-WROW-590. So, one thing, I think I mentioned this before, but about 3 or 4 weeks ago, the state legislature, which I think is still in session, I don't know, finally, after many years, passed a new power of attorney statute. And I don't know yet if it's been signed by the governor, but I think it probably will be because it has no revenue implications for the state. And since 2009, for the last 10 or 11 years, we've had this gargantuanly complex, lengthy power of attorney form that the state legislature mandated back in 2009. It's monstrously complicated. Don't you agree, Debbie?
It is.
And I think ours is like 11 or 12 pages long. Mm-hmm. You know, the basic power of attorney form is like 5 or 6 pages. And then there's this thing called a statutory gifting rider or a transfer rider, which is attached to it, and frankly, which most people need to have. Finally, they have changed the form. So the new form will probably only be maybe 5 or 6 pages long, which is really what it ought to be, and maybe too long to begin with, but it's better than what we have. Unfortunately, the new law doesn't go into effect till next year, all right? So from the time it's signed by the governor, it becomes effective 6 months after that. So it's going to be, you know, January, February, March before we're actually able to use the new form. But I want to just point that out to everybody because some of you may, in fact, wanting to be shifting to the shorter form simply for simplicity, and also it will give you the opportunity to revisit the persons you have named as your agents and make sure that they are still the same people. The other thing is, for those of you who have power of attorneys that you may have gotten, like, from a form store or worse yet, downloaded from the internet, you need to understand that in New York, if you are applying for Medicaid for someone, whether it is for nursing home care, for chronic care, or for personal care services, all powers of attorney that are used by agents to either transfer assets or sign Medicaid applications have to they have to have the transfer rider attached to it. Otherwise, Medicaid isn't going to recognize those as legally accomplished transfers. And that's really critically important. You don't want to have to go and make all these transfers. If you make these transfers for your mom or dad or your Aunt Helen, and the power of attorney that you're using to do the transfers, because they can't sign their name anymore, doesn't authorize you to make gifts or transfer assets to a trust, then those transfers are void. You haven't actually made them, even though you transferred the title. And the county social services department is going to say, no, you didn't have the authority to make those transfers. They're still your aunt's property. That's still your mom's bank account. And so now you got to spend it.
Right. You really do need to have the statutory gifts rider. And another thing that we're getting a lot of pushback from actual banks and financial planners that we're trying to use the old forms that were before 2009 of September, where they were only like one page to three page. And they're saying, well, you really need to do an updated power of attorney. And we're saying, well, they did this power of attorney back then, and now they may not be able to execute a new power of attorney. And legally, you need to take this form. So I'm trying to educate my clients that haven't done the new form, like they haven't been in since September of 2009, which is when the power of attorney form changed, and then it changed again in 2010. But, you know, you really should look at your documents every 5 years, and you should update them. And if you need to do the new form, then you should really think about it. Like Carrie says, there's going to be a new one coming out in January, probably. But you really need to kind of dust off your documents. And another issue that I've had with the power of attorney is, you know, husband and wife came in 15 years ago. They named each other, and then they named the kids. And now mom and dad are 15 years older than they were, and they may or may not be able to make decisions for each other anymore. And so the kids are coming to me and saying, well, what do we do? Do we have to do a new power of attorney, or what are we going to do? Some people, they can't do a new power of attorney, so instead they're doing a resignation. So the person resigns his power of attorney, so the next person steps up.
Mm-hmm. It's a common problem. Once you get to the point where you can't sign anymore, I mean, or you're in mid to late stages of dementia or Alzheimer's, you can't really legally sign a legally enforceable power of attorney anymore. You have to be mentally, you have to have the requisite mental capacity to do that. So, it just points out the importance of reviewing these documents, as Debbie said, every 3 to 5 years. I think in the last month I have had 3 people come into my office who have not been in to see us for 15 years. That is a real bad decision. and you all know out there the way that your lives have changed over the last 15 years. Lots of things happen, you know. People are born, people die, people get divorced, children grow up, have their own children. You know, when you did your will 15 years ago and your kids were 15 and 17, you know, you probably had your sister or your brother or maybe your best friend was the executor of your will, and you still had a guardian for your kids. Now your kids are in their 30s, and they're perfectly capable and mature enough to be your executor and your power of attorney, you know, but you still got your sister-in-law there. Well, guess what? If you die, your sister-in-law is going to be your executor, not your children. Now,
right.
You've complicated your estate by, A, involving your children with their aunt, and depending on the relationship there. Also, she's entitled to be paid commissions for what she does, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So why waste the family money paying your sister-in-law to do something that your kids are perfectly capable of doing? I mean, it's just a simple, practical example of how ignoring a will and not keeping everything up to date and re-reviewing it periodically just create some disharmony and unhappiness in the family. Say, well, how come Aunt Peg is getting paid $18,000 to administer my mom's estate? Why is that? You know, I mean, it makes no sense. That money could go to your kids.
Right. And the thing is, I always tell people we want to try to make your documents as bulletproof as possible. So we need to make sure whenever we're doing these documents that we have backup, right? So what if you don't update your documents and whenever you pass away, that was the only person that you had as your executor, right? And there's no one in line to be your executor. So you got to think about those things, too. That's why you really need to make sure that you, again, look at your documents. You make sure they still say what you want them to say. And we sit down with you, or we can do it via phone. We can do it via Zoom. I've been doing a lot of Zoom consults now. It's kind of interesting. This meeting with the people via Zoom or on a conference call, because a lot of people still don't feel secure in coming into the office. We are doing in-office appointments, and it's tricky. whenever people come into the Saratoga office, we have them call first, right? They've got an appointment, they come in, they call. We have a hand sanitizer dispenser. We make sure everybody has masks on. We sanitize everything, and we don't have people that overlap. So that's why we have to have people call, because the doors are locked, because we don't want people to overlap. We have the same situation in Albany where the doors are locked and the people have to call before they can come in, because we want to make sure that if we've had clients before them, that we've had a chance to wipe everything down and be prepared for them to come in, because we want to make sure we don't expose anybody to anything.
Yeah, it's really important. Yeah, no, we do. It's all of our appointments in Albany. When they get to the parking lot, they call the receptionist. And, you know, guess what? Unlike many businesses, we have a real live human being receptionist.
We do.
And she will answer the phone and say hello, and you're not talking to a computer or some monitor that tells you to press 1 for this and 2 for that and 3 for the other thing, you know. And then you'll come up through the elevator to the office. You'll come in and everything will be nice and clean. And if you forgot a mask or don't have a mask, we have masks here. If you want to wear gloves, some people want to wear gloves. We have gloves. We have all the equipment here if you forgot it or you want something. And, you know, we're trying to keep everybody safe and well.
Well, we have a live person on the phone right now, so you guys can do
that.
Nice. This cool. is a Bev, B-E-V, in Gilderland.
Good morning, Bev.
Yes, good morning. I'm calling because I have a relative died recently, was 53 years old, and he did not leave a will or a trust. His dad is he has his father and two adult children. And I don't know what's happening right now, but what should they do? I know he has to go to probate without any will, but who is in charge of the estate?
So you said he has a parent and he has two adult children, right? Is that what you said?
Yes.
So if he didn't have a will, so a will is only going to control assets he had individually in his name, right? So did he have a house or anything like that?
No, but he had a bank account and he had life insurance.
Okay, so the life insurance probably, hopefully, has a beneficiary on it. The bank account might... No beneficiary,
No, it's going to the estate.
Okay, so basically what would happen is the courts would look to the kids, right? Because they're his next of kin, because he doesn't have a spouse.
Okay.
So they would look to the kids, and both of the kids can apply together to be appointed as administrators, right? They're not going to be executors because there's no will. They would be administrators. They can petition the court to be appointed as administrators. One or both could. And then they would issue them letters of administration, and then they would be able to collect the life insurance and collect the bank accounts and find out what other assets that he had. But whenever you petition for letters of administration, he had a pension. The pension probably ends when he passed, but you never know. And once they're appointed administrator,
he hasn't collected from it yet because he was only 53.
Oh, okay. So, again, once they're appointed, they would be able to do the investigation to find out what assets are out there and what's available. So what they need to do is they probably should hire an attorney to do the administration proceeding because it's not something that's fairly easy to do. So they should hire an attorney, have them petition to prepare the petition for administration. They also have to do a family tree. They have to have a copy of the paid funeral bill, an original death certificate, and all of that goes to the court, and then the court would make sure that, you know, the family tree, they would look and say, okay, he doesn't have a spouse, there's only these two kids, and then they would appoint them as administrators, and then at that point, they would be able to look into what to do with all of his assets or his pension or anything like that. They would basically step into his shoes and have the power that he had while he was alive.
Okay. That sounds good because, like, does it matter that they don't live in the same state?
No, it doesn't matter at all. Basically, if they hire, is it New York that the person passed away in?
No, he lived in Kentucky, but they live in New York.
Okay. So in Kentucky, I'd say the rules are probably very similar to New York. I don't know because I don't practice in Kentucky, but they should probably hire an attorney in Kentucky. The attorney in Kentucky could prepare all the paperwork, mail it out to them. They could sign it and send it in. They don't have to live in the state where the person passed away.
Okay. All right, thank you. I've been listening for years, and this is the first time I had to call about anything. So,
well, I'm glad you called. It's also nice to have people ask questions.
Yes. All right, hey. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You have a great, great weekend. I wanted to mention that on our website, if you go onto our website and you go to our blog page, and again, the website's www.herzoglaw.com. A lot of our webinars have been recorded, and one of them is what to do when a loved one dies, right? So people can go on there. They can see Harry doing will versus trusts. Harry's the star. He's on the blog. And there's other ones. There's the wills versus trust. I think almost all of the ones that we do are on there. So it could be one or the other of us doing them. It's not necessarily all of us on there. We put one of each up there. So if you missed it on Webinar Wednesday or the week of webinars, you can go on to our website and you can click on it and you can watch it. So those are available on our website. And I've told people that. I've had several people that have called and said, hey, you know, what do I do? This person passed away. And I was like, hey, you know, go on the website, go to our blog page, and click on one of the webinars and watch it until you get the information that you need, you know?
It's a lot easier. The other thing is, I mean, apart from the administration proceeding and the court review on collection, inventory, and distribution of the person's assets, you know, there's other stuff that needs to be done when somebody dies. You know, you got to cancel their supplemental. Normally, the funeral home will notify Social Security and Medicare, but the person probably had like supplemental health insurance through AARP or United Healthcare. You got to cancel that insurance. If they had credit cards, you should write a letter to the credit card company and cancel the credit cards and ask for written confirmation. Send them a copy. They just need a photocopy of a death certificate. There's a lot of post death, identity theft, and fraud.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to cancel their credit cards if they were receiving a pension from the state or from a private company. You want to write to them and tell them again that they died, they have a death certificate. Find out if there were any retirement benefits. Sometimes a company will have it like a death benefit of maybe $3,000 or $5,000 for their employees. I know the state of New York does. All those little things that you don't think about need to be done, and that's stuff you do like outside the court system of just, you know, getting legal authority to distribute the assets. So isn't that one of our webinars that's coming up, or it's already on the blog? It's already on the blog. All right.
It's already on the blog, and it'll be coming up again. I was just looking at the list.
Maybe
actually.
In September. Yeah, maybe in
it'll
September.
It'll be in September on, September, I'm working on it, hold on, scrolling. Okay, Wednesday, September 23rd at 2 o'clock, what to do when a loved one dies. But again, it is available on the blog page, so you can go on to the blog and click on it. Something that we're doing new, you guys can mark your calendars. Friday, September 25th at 2 p.m., right? So 2 in the afternoon on Friday, September 25th. That seems like a long ways away, but it's not really.
About a month.
It's not on our website yet because we're just kind of posting these. We're going to have a live Q&A session, right? So it's going to be a live Q&A session on Zoom on Friday, September 25th on Medicare versus Medicaid. And it's a special Q&A. I mean, that won't just be what we're talking about, but if you have questions, you can log on. It's going to be interesting because whenever people log on to our Zoom presentations, we automatically mute them, right? But this one, because it's live, if people have questions, they can raise their hand. It's really kind of cool on Zoom. You can, like, click this little thing, and your little hand shows up. And then you can actually... It's funny. It is.
Cool.
So you can ask.
It's cool.
You can,
it's really cool.
You can ask questions. So we'll like unmute you so you can ask your question. And it'll be kind of like this radio show, right? People can call in and ask questions, except now it'll be like a live Zoom presentation where people can just like sit there and ask questions. So I think that's going to be really cool. So that's going to be on Friday, September 25th. So kind of mark your calendars now so you can do it. And it's going to be live, and it's going to be at 2 o'clock on Friday, September 25th. And this will be the first one of these we've done. So it'll be interesting to see how it works out.
It'll be fun. These things are really, they're fun for us, and hopefully they're informative for you. And that is an area, the differences between Medicare and Medicaid, I think among our client base is one of the most confusing things that people are confounded about. They're not sure what Medicare covers, what Medicaid covers, particularly in terms of things regarding rehabilitation services following a hospital stay. And the other thing that's really tremendously confusing to people as they're turning 65 and signing up for Medicare is they're unsure about the differences between, plain old standalone Medicare and what are called a Medicare Advantage plan, which is like an HMO, which stands for a health maintenance organization. And what are the advantages and disadvantages of one as opposed to the other? And this, all of these things are confounding to people. And it's, there's hundreds of websites where you can go on and get this information, but it's not terribly well sorted out. It tends to be confusing. And I'll tell you, if you go on the Medicare website, forget about it. It's confusing, even after you read these things, as to who covers what, which is this, which is that. And so maybe we'll be able to help simplify that for you a little bit and unconfuse you. I hope so.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff. I mean, I keep harping on going to the website, but on the blog page there actually is, right now, it's can you transfer your Medicare and Medicaid plans when you move to another state? There's all of our webinars that have been recorded, and I think there's one that is on the changes to Medicare. So it's talking about Medicare on there. So It's kind of interesting. You can go through there and click on, there's one on here, when buying a Medigap policy, it really pays to shop around. And so there's lots of different things on there. You can just go on the website, which is www.herzoglaw.com, and you can just read what you want to read. There's lots of really good articles there. There's lots of webinars on there. We try to put new information up there. The client webinar is actually on there, where we talked about funding a trust, and we talked about the changes with coronavirus, right, with the CARES Act. And there's lots of different things on there, so it'd be a cool thing to go on the website and just kind of sit there and at your leisure while you drink your next cup of coffee, look around, and then you can write down your questions so that you can do them live on the on the webinar in September. That'll be something to look forward to. Or you can write down your questions, and we'll be back here next week on the radio show, and you can call in and ask your questions, because we'd love to have live people, hopefully live, call in and ask questions about what's coming up, and what's going on.
There's not a lot of dead people to call in with questions.
Well, generally not. They do that,
Sorry.
Was funny because whenever the coronavirus first started, I was at the grocery store, and there was this lady that was literally, her shopping cart was like over the top, and her daughter just kept putting stuff in the cart. And I remember this day because the mom looks at the daughter, she goes, "It's not the zombie apocalypse." So, it was just...
Well, her basket was stuffed with paper towels and toilet paper. This was back in, remember back in March when you got it, you couldn't, people were trading gold bars for a roll of toilet paper. those days seem to have vanished. We seem to have plenty of the basic supplies,
Yeah, we do. But, you know, so again, this week, coming up on Wednesday, August 19th at 10 a.m. in the morning, how to plan your estate, and 2 o'clock, planning for when a loved one has special needs. And then Wednesday, August 26th is going to, at 10 a.m. is the coronavirus checklist. Do I have everything I need in event of a health crisis? And 2 p.m., Medicaid and estate and planning myths. So those are great things. You can go to the website, click on it, or you can call Stacy at our office at 518-465-7581. Again, 518-465-7581. She's extension 126. She can register you for the webinars. You know, it's something you can do from the, you can sit out in your yard and watch it. I have one neighbor that watches the races. He has a flat screen TV that's set up on his patio. I walked by the other day and he was trying to get it hooked up so he could sit out on his patio and watch the races. It was hilarious.
So anyway, I have to say, after the show today, I am going, my wife and a friend of hers are having a little garage sale at our friend's house, okay, over in Bonanza. So if you are, I thought I'd give a free plug. So if you're driving around Bonanza this morning, come to 2 Pateman Circle off of Van Rensselaer Boulevard. If you sign out, we're going to have a little garage sale. Of some stuff that we're, you know, a bunch of families were cleaning out of their houses and things, and, you know, we have pretty good junk, you know. Anyway, I remember when Ben, do you remember when you used to the Trading Post?
I do, I remember, yeah.
All right, no automobiles, no firearms, no garage sales, no.
Is there any Halloween stuff? Because I've got a guy in Mechanicville that would go over there.
Oh, my God, I remember him. I remember him. I don't think so, okay. But I don't know. I know there's some Christmas decorations. Okay.
Oof.
Okay.
That's great, Harry. You know, there's a lot of people that cleaned out stuff whenever they were at home because they were home for the coronavirus, so I know that.
I know. Everybody was cleaning out their basements and their attics and everything, as was my wife. So. And I was thinking about this for Christmas. What are we going to do this Christmas this year? We're still socially distancing. What are little kids going to do? They're not going to be able to sit on Santa's lap, even with a mask on, right?
I don't know. We'll have to plan ahead. So you guys have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next weekend. Bye
now.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.